Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Pot of Gold podcast. I am Fernando Ramirez. He's Mike Berendino, and he is Thomas Noe. The inaugural show, guys. Thomas, let me start with you. How are you feeling today?
How would I not be feeling today? It's 70 degrees outside. Nice, gentle rain falling here in South Bend, Indiana. Finally, springtime. No more snow, no more cold, except for maybe tomorrow. So other than that, everything's great.
See, Thomas and Mike are Mike. My bad. Let me ask you how you're doing today.
I'm doing great. I would just like you to pronounce my name properly.
Berendino.
Yeah, I heard you said Berendino, and I hear it about 10 different ways. I'm very sensitive about this, and it's been, you know, product tested by the family decades ago. Berendino, just let that second R roll off. Just kind of let it disappear. And don't, it's not San Bernardino or anything like that. Okay. So I know you got Bernardino probably in the mind of being a Cali guy, but no, you'll get it. You'll practice.
Yeah, no, I'll practice. I just stick with Mike. You guys have obviously been here for years. I mean, Thomas, you've been here for decades covering Notre Dame football. Just a little bit of background on you, Tom. How long have you been here? Let the folks know. They know you already.
Do I want to tell them how old it's gonna date me? But I have now been with the South Bend Tribune for 30 years. I started in 1992 covering Notre Dame hockey. After that, I've covered Notre Dame football for 5 years. Then I covered Notre Dame basketball now for 24 years. And since 2017, I'm back on the football beat, doing a little of everything. And I've covered just about everything for the South Bend Tribune, everything from the Indianapolis 500 to a NCAA women's basketball Final Four, Notre Dame football, Notre Dame men's basketball, obviously in the Big East and the ACC, and now back on the football beat for the last 4+ years.
So you'd say you're the godfather of the newspaper.
No, you could say that. I will not make any Don Corleone references. I will not be Don Corleone. You will not be Sonny. Mike B will not be Al Pacino. And nobody's going to sleep with the fishes this season.
Mike, you've been around for years covering baseball, covering NFL, covering a lot of different things. But how long have you been around covering Notre Dame?
Well, I would just segue to say every time I think I'm out, they keep pulling me back in. Yeah. And that's what's happened here. I was 2018 was my first year of being around Notre Dame football. I'm not going to do what Tom did. It's very dangerous when you've been in the business as long as we have to let people know where the professional career started, you know, how far, but what decade that was. I'll just say that poof, here I was in 2018. For the Stanford game, I covered a Twins game on a Wednesday night in Minnesota and drove all day on a Friday. And by Saturday night, I was writing for the Indy Star about Notre Dame and Stanford. And I've been around since then. I only did the 18 and 19 seasons for the Indy Star. And then there in the famous merger between the Gannett people and the Gatehouse people, I lost out in that. I lost the game of musical chairs. And so I was still around writing freelance stuff for the Chicago Sun-Times and for Forbes, which is very nice to all displaced journalists. And so we had that for the 20 season and the 21 seasons. And then this came up, and I would have walked on glass to come back and do this job for the South Bend Tribune. This was what I was hoping would come out of the merger back in 2019. But nobody asked me, and but here we are. What a pleasure to be with Tom, the godfather of the paper that we all know him as, and you know, be able to have teammates. You know, when you're a freelancer, people don't think about that. They think, well, you're around the team, you must be similar to everybody else. But no, you really don't. No one's invested in you doing your job properly. You're just you're in competition with everyone. You have no teammates, so it's nice to have teammates again, and to share information with you guys, and then to do podcasts with teammates. What a treat! So that's as much information as you're getting on me and my history.
Speaking of teammates, before we move on, let me just say that January was a very lonely month up here in South Bend with all the coaching changes going on, man. All the guys in the portal, all the guys leaving, declaring, and there was nobody other than our
game.
High school guy, bowl game, other than our high school guy, Justin Frommer, to try to track down everything that was happening with Notre Dame football. I was still on the Notre Dame men's basketball beat. So to have two other guys with me, I feel like I can just sit back and, like Fernando has mentioned, I don't have to go to practice every day. I don't have to go see Ed Orgeron. You guys have that covered, and to know that it is in such good hands, it makes my job a hell of a lot easier after what January was. January has 31 days in it. It felt like it had 131 days.
So you're basically Allen Iverson. Practice? We talking about practice?
I'll go to practice. I'm not going to go see five periods of practice. Now, look, we talked about our careers. I go back to the days where every single practice was open to the media. We would be standing outside. That was before they had an indoor facility. From August to November, we would be standing outside on the practice fields and watch every single snap and every single drill of those teams in the 1990s.
Wow.
And then, Tom, if I'm not mistaken, you could go on the field at the end of the game, at the end of the practice, and just grab whatever coach or player that you needed. Is that how it was?
This is how it worked. They used to practice where the soccer and lacrosse fields are right now. Obviously, the indoor facility wasn't built, and the main locker room headquarters, nerve center of Notre Dame football, was in the Joyce Center. So you would be able to walk from the practice field back to the Joyce Center with guys like Ronaldo Wynn, Aaron Taylor, Bryant Young. You'd be finished with those guys. Then you'd walk back to the practice field and walk all the way back again with Ron Paulus, who was the quarterback, Derek Mays, Lake Dawson, who's now GM in the NFL. And then you'd go back and Joe Moore would still be out on the practice field smoking his cigarettes. You'd walk back to the locker room with Joe Moore. So there were times after Notre Dame practices, you could literally get four or five true one-on-ones with players and coaches. Those were the solid days of covering Notre Dame football.
That is awesome. Yeah, I mean, and that's what you're going to get here with Pot and Gold. You're going to get Pot of Gold. You're going to get a lot of history with Thomas and with Mike and everybody. I just called you Thomas, Tom. definitely a lot of fun. I'm coming via San Diego/Los Angeles. Covered the Chargers for the last few years. Interned with them at first, and then started making my way doing other stuff. I've covered MLS. I've covered some basketball. I've covered some other stuff. Covered the Chargers for 4 or 5 years. So definitely awesome to be here. And like Mike said, it's awesome to have teammates, because out on the West Coast, there's no teammates. It's just you by yourself, and see what you can get, and see what you can see what separates you from others. So it's definitely interesting to now have teammates and to kind of be able to rely on other people, but definitely a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun to get to know you guys. When I came out for my interview, I remember what sold me was Tom Noe. Tom Noe was the reason why. I was like, okay, that's it. I have to work with this guy. I was like, this guy got it in the bag, and he got me to give the okay and the thumbs up.
What did he say? What? He's the closer, apparently. What did he say?
He's like, I'm going to take you out to lunch. I was like, all right. Takes me out to lunch. He's like, you better sign that damn deal. I'm like, all right, cool. We're good to go. You? That's Where'd all. You go? We went to Brothers.
Brothers. No,
Brothers.
It's the place to go if you need to talk business or you need to talk anything, because you could sit there literally all day and nobody's going to bother you. Right. You know, and as a disclaimer, Mike was not yet hired, so I couldn't say, wait until you meet this guy, Mike B. He's going to be the guy you're going to be working with. You're going to be the two tag team main guys. Right, so at first, it was only Fernando was the only one that I knew of that we were closing in on hiring. So I couldn't talk up Mike B the way I wanted to at that point.
Yeah, no, but it was definitely interesting. It was fun. It was funny because I was carrying around my suitcase the whole day. So it was one of those things. It was a lot of fun, though. And definitely getting to know both of you guys this last like month and a half has been awesome, and getting to work with you guys. But now we got to talk about the team, Notre Dame. There's a lot of excitement. It's a new era. Brian Kelly is now with his family down in LSU. It is now a new Marcus Freeman brings in a new era to Notre Dame football. So just let's go a little bit with let's start off with Mike. Mike, what's one thing that you've noticed about a coach, or if it's Marcus, it's Marcus, but what's something that you've noticed about this coaching staff, somebody on this coaching staff?
Well, it, for one thing, it's been great, you know, as Tom alluded to, that in the past you could actually talk to the assistants in the Brian Kelly era, and across the college football landscape, his assistants have become much more mysterious to us. But I think it was a smart move with an overhauled staff on the 16th of February, which was my third official day at the South Bend Tribune, to, as Tom recalls, to roll all those guys out at once and give us a chance to have at them, right? They each had their little table, and they were all there. And so Marcus Freeman put together a staff with a variety of experience and components and backgrounds and skills and strengths. They're all good recruiters and they're all good talkers. And that's what we've that's what we got to benefit from there. We've had a chance, Tom and I, over that period, last couple months, to feature just about every one of those assistants, whether they were holdovers or new guys. And when you ask what jumps out at me in terms of overall, be the energy, and not like the previous staff was lacked energy necessarily, but this one is going to go overboard if they're going to do anything on the energy component. So when I look down at the open of five periods that we got to see yesterday, it struck me that Chancey Stuckey, for instance, the wide receivers coach, a guy with a history on the media side, so obviously he can communicate, worked in New York and did some acting. In this case, he was crouched down during one of the drills, 20 yards away from where the receiver was starting his route. And as he wasn't covering the guy, but he wanted to get low and get a good view of it. And he has hat on backwards, and he was barking orders. He was clapping a lot. He was high energy. And, you know, what can you really glean from one of these practices? Not a whole lot. I'm not other than taking roll and seeing who's got a wrap here or, you know, or limp there. But one thing overall that's it has jumped out is high energy, positivity. Haven't seen a single guy. Now, they're going to probably do it as soon as we leave. Haven't seen a single guy pulled out of line and barked at in football coach style. Now, they probably wait till we leave and then they just light them up. But in general, what we have seen is trying to lift people, bring them along, emphasize what they're doing right, and then and let that be the message to the group. And then with Chancey Stuckey, what he's doing with a wide receiver group that's very young, untested, and has a lot of upside, has definitely stood out.
What do you think, Tom? In your few practices that you've been there, what have you kind of noticed? No, I'm kidding. You know, you've gotten to talk to these guys numerous times. You got all the hires. I'm going to run down your resume through January. You had the Fiesta Bowl. Then you had all these new hires coming in. So I got you. 30 days felt like 600.
But yeah. And like Mike said, just the energy with the staff and the fact that we're able to get to know these guys from the start. Like when I came in covering Notre Dame football in 17, Mike Elston had been there. Brian Kelly obviously had been there for years. All the different parts. Harry Hiestand was still the line coach then. He leaves for the Bears. Now he comes back. But just to have all these guys starting from zero, even Harry Hiestand to an extent, Harry Hiestand just seems like he's more energized. He's got more juice now working with Marcus Freeman in 2022 than when he did when he was at the end of his first tenure with Brian Kelly before he left for the Chicago Bears. So just getting to know them and know that they're all hitting the ground running. They're all starting from the same place, and how you get to know them, how you get to understand them, interact with them. Like guys that we've talked to, whether it's Chancey Stuckey or Al Washington or Dylan McCullough, under the previous coaching staff, we probably never would have talked to those guys. And if we did, it would have been 6, 7, 8, 9 months down the road. So to get to talk to them one-on-one the way we were able to in February, you just get a sense that you know them better. You know what they're thinking. You know what their thoughts are about the game, about their position, about where they are in the program, what they want to get out of it. It's just it makes for so many more great stories that we can tell and possibly tell just because we feel like we know them better.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, I was gonna go with Harry Hiestand just because he's brought this, like you guys said, this energy. It just seems like the coaching staff is fresh. They like the direction that Marcus is headed in. They seem to have really bought in, which obviously it's your coaching staff that needs to buy in first and then the players. So definitely Harry Hiestand, you can tell after practice. And center Jared Patterson said this. He's like, before we would stay after practice, maybe for about 5 to 10 minutes, but they're staying 30 minutes after practice, and they're still going over drills with Harry Hiestand. And he's brought in Zach Martin's come in, other Quentin Nelson, other guys have come, NFL guys have come in. They've talked to these guys, and they've explained. They obviously Marcus has an open door policy, but even before I got here, I was at the combine and I told Chargers head coach Brandon Staley that I'd gotten the job. And he's like, man, you're going to love Harry Hiestand. I was like, really? He's like, that guy is a freaking legend. He's like, when he was with Chicago with me, he's like, that dude, he's like, he would come into my office and he'd be like, I need to talk to you about your pass rushers. What's going on? Well, if you attack the opposing offensive line this way, it's going to help Khalil and it's going to help Leonard Floyd or whoever was on the opposite side. It's going to help them attack better. And he's like, an offensive line coach is telling me this and giving me this stuff. So he just said Harry Hiestand literally thinks above and beyond. And it really, you can tell if this offensive, it's like Marcus said day one when I got here, the offensive line and the defensive line are going to be our strong suits. And we're going to need them to be the anchors of this team. And bringing back Harry Hiestand out of retirement was definitely a huge plus in it. And you can tell if Marcus can do that, bring him out of retirement to come in and help, then that just means that Harry is bought in and everybody's bought in. So that's definitely Harry Hiestand and what he's done with the offensive line has really impressed me so far. But now talking a little bit about obviously the second part of who needs to buy in, the players. Let's not go quarterback, but what player stood out to you guys? I know it's only spring and everything, but who's a player, Tom, that has kind of stood out to you or you're looking to make an impact this season?
Well, the one practice that the media was allowed in for the entirety of it from start to finish, I did not go to. I was on assignment covering the Marion High School boys basketball championship game in Indy.
You don't have to give us excuses, Tom. You're the godfather.
Had to be there. He made the right call.
had to be there. Wanted to see practice. But obviously the one guy that everybody's going to say that you can't say, like you can't say who stood out to you, Michael Mayer. Like everybody knows Michael Mayer's going to be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. He might be the best tight end in the country. It doesn't take even a guy that covers Notre Dame men's basketball to figure out, hey, look at number 87. He's different. He's special. But in the little bits and pieces that we've seen, the five periods here or the five periods there, maybe the one guy, especially on defense, that I'm interested, really intrigued at seeing. I don't know how much we're going to see him next week at the Blue Gold game, but as we move forward to the start of the 2022 season, is linebacker Maris Leofile. Like he just looks – he just looks like he's going to fit in Al Golden's defense. And had he not broken his ankle and wrecked his leg the way he did in that late practice last year, Maris Leofile was on track to have the type of season and have the type of input from a statistical standpoint that J.D. Bertrand had, where J.D. Bertrand led the team in tackles last year. That was Maris Leofile's spot. So when I'm watching, when I've seen those five practice periods, those that little window that we get, one guy that's really jumped out to keep an eye on is Maris Leofile.
Tom, by the way, that practice, I can give you a spoiler right now. He was 7-11, 24-7. He was open no matter if they were doing one-on-one drills, whatever they were doing, the man was open. So that's all you need to know.
It doesn't matter like what they're doing, what drill they're running, what this, what that. You can just look out there and say, that number 87, he seems like he's a pretty good football player, not know anything about Notre Dame. Like
he reminds me of a future Hall of Famer that wore 87. He's deciding right now if he should go back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or not to play with Tom Brady one more year. He reminds me a lot of him. But Mike, who's somebody that stood out to you?
Well, by the way, that guy you're referring to, that was the nickname that they stuck on Mayer when he first got here. Within weeks of getting on campus, he was baby Gronk.
Oh.
And they hope that, and I think it's definitely the case, that this guy's a lot more serious about his potential and his career and is not going to be a party animal in any way. I would be shocked if the personality part of Gronk ever crept into the Michael Mayer scouting report. But he is going to be big time in the pros as long as he stays healthy, of course. And it's going to be fun to watch him. I did end my questions. You guys heard the other day to Tommy Rees about what Mayer can actually work on. And I said, because he's going to be double teamed all year. Yeah. Just, I mean, just obvious. And whether you call it bracket coverage or shading or whatever, maybe there's not the truth. But basically, this is the guy, Tom, in basketball terms, you would play triangle and two and let two people just be on him. That's probably what you would do. He's that good. So whether that's going to mean opportunity for other people, of course, that's going to mean that the guys out wide, it's incumbent upon them to really make sure that they're open, that they can beat press coverage, and that they take advantage of the fact that they will not be double covered all year or bracketed, because if Mayer's on the field, he's the focal point. I would say the guy that jumped out at me, I'm going to save the one that I think Fernando's going to go for. I'm going to be nice here and let him also pump his story that's in the South Bend Tribune and NDInsider.com today. But I'm going to go with Jaden Mickey, because I wrote about him going into the spring. He's one of the 12 early enrollees, and a number of them have flashed. Junior T, Tui Halamaka in the middle has flashed, but Jaden Mickey at corner, which is a position of need, not enough depth at corner. Not only does he seem to be able to handle it, the speed of the game, but he has attitude. And corners, as we know, and especially in the NFL, as Fernando can tell you, a corner has got to have an unshakable belief, if not an oversized confidence, that, you know, Dion-esque to play that position, because you're going to look bad at times. You're going to, the whole stadium's going to know that you failed, but you have to come right back the next snap and believe that you are a bad man. And I think Jaden Mickey believes that he's a bad man, and he's proven it, because if he breaks something up just in a drill, he's given the incomplete sign. He's whooping. He's filling that indoor facility with energy himself. And for a freshman to do that, he's been here now 3 months. And talking with him, he's very, we did get to talk with him. That's another thing I want to say. Smart move. More access is great for us, but it's also good for the people that we're interviewing, I believe, whether that's the assistants who get a chance to practice being future coordinators and answering the questions they will hopefully one day as head coaches, or these freshmen. We've only missed now one of the 12. Tyson Ford has not come to speak with us yet. Tom Tuck wrote about Jadarian Price recently, so mature, ready to hit the ground running from day one, and getting it out of the way, getting your public utterances and realizing that we're not the enemy. We're just the conduit to the fan base. Mickey handled that really well back in January, early February as well. And here he is. He's ready for the spotlight. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he gets on the field quite a bit. Certainly in special teams, he's going to be part of it. And they've even given him a chance to return punts. They need a punt returner, and he's on the short list to do that, to replace Kyron Williams. So that's my guy.
Obviously, Mike alluded to it. I'm going to have to go with Brandon Joseph. I love defense. So to my thing is, like, when I came in, I was like, oh my God, I get to watch a little bit of Kyle Hamilton before he goes into the draft and everything. And I think when I saw Kyle at first, like in person, I'm like, oh, this guy's huge. Like, he's pretty big for a safety. He's kind of built more like a linebacker. So now you go to Brandon Joseph, who Chris O'Leary said, he's like, I'm not trying to pump him up. He's safeties coach, Chris O'Leary. He's like, I'm not trying to pump him up or give him any gas, but he has had a pick in almost every single practice. And it's funny, because I asked Brandon, I'm like, hey, coach says that you have an interception in every practice. He's like, well, I have about six right now out of eight practices, but the other two practices don't count because we didn't have pads on and we were kind of going a little bit soft. And I started laughing. I'm like, hey, there you go. He's counting in his head what his stats are and everything. But Brandon has surrounded himself, and this is what I wrote about also, is that he's making an impact on the field, but he wants to make an impact as a leader as well. He's like, I'm coming in as a new guy. I can't just start spouting, because he's like, whatever happened at Northwestern, that doesn't count here. He's like, I'm new, I'm fresh. I can't just come out and start screaming at guys like, move over here, do this, do that. I can't do that. And I feel like I need to start using my voice a little bit better and pick and choose my spots. But also, the thing that impacted me about him is he surrounded himself with NFL guys. He likes surrounding himself with people from the next level. So he's like, I pick out Golden's mind. I like picking out his best friend is Greg Newsome from the Cleveland Browns. who was with him at Northwestern. So that's another guy that he picks his brain a lot too. And then obviously Al Golden put him in contact with his favorite safety, Jesse Bates, and they talked a little bit of football and kind of what he needs to do to get to the next level. So I think Brandon, you literally have, if Brandon's season goes the way it should, the way he's hoping it will, he will catapult himself into the same stratosphere as Kyle Hamilton. He'll be a first round draft pick, but definitely, you're exchanging one first round draft pick for another. So it's definitely going to be exciting to see what Brandon Joseph brings to this defense, and everybody's very excited about him. But one position that everybody keeps on looking at is the quarterback position. There's a lot of competition. There's obviously you have Tyler, you have Drew. It's kind of, well, which one are they going to go with? And the coaches have talked them both up at the same exact level. Like, oh, Tyler's doing this well, Drew's doing that well. But Mike, what are some of your early, observations of kind of how this quarterback battle may be going?
Well, we went into it assuming, and I think correctly, that there was more invested as a program in Tyler Buchner, and mm-hmm. certainly more snaps on the field last year and some more opportunity to show his potential. But so he was, no matter how they said it was an open competition, he was the leader going into the competition. But, and we're not getting any looks at anything that will determine this. We will see the blue gold game, but even then, my understanding from what's been presented to us, it makes sense. Is they're going to go back after? I don't think they're going to even come in after the blue gold game, as long as Buchner doesn't have a Phil Jurkovic kind of day and say he's our starter. I don't think they're going to do that. Poor Phil, that was brutal. He was sacked officially like 11 times. Remember that time? And yeah. Next thing he's on the phone with Boston College, but. It took a little time. It happened later, but it was clear that his processing speed was lacking that day. But here's the thing. This Drew Pine, and you wrote about him, Brandon, and Tom's heard this. When Drew Pine talks, he's got a quality that, you can't talk your way into being starting quarterback, but he knows how to brand himself. And I do think it's authentic. He's got leadership qualities to spare, and he has this is the guy who goes to the grotto every other day, and he's not lighting candles for Buchner to be the starter, and it's the guy who grew up like you wrote, reciting Rudy passages in his living room. The narrative of Drew Pine is Ian Book-esque. In fact, because of these other pieces, grotto, Rudy, it's beyond that. But he went to school on Ian Book. He followed him around as his protege. And
they still talk today too, and he still picks his brain for advice.
Great guy to have on speed dial. And Ian Book was always a guy, three-star quarterback, who ends up being the winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history, and just five losses as a starter. Now people will say those losses were, three of those were in games they really needed, but incredibly productive, better than the sum of his parts. And Drew Pine still may be that kind of guy if entrusted to do it. The tricky part is, Tyler Buchner was your four-star/five-star guy. Everybody wanted him, and he does a lot of things that lead to winning as well. But does he have that other, that X factor, that he steps in the huddle and everything's fine and you're going to go 90-plus yards down the field and beat Virginia Tech when you need to? I don't know that he's there yet. I think that that's something that has to be determined. And then there's this other piece that I think, Tom, you've covered a lot of these recruiting battles through the years, and I haven't covered nearly as many Notre Dame-wise, but you tell me if you're feeling any echoes of previous competitions where there was a piece out there. They didn't get the guy from Birmingham yesterday, Chris Vezina, but Dante Moore hasn't announced yet, and he's a five-star. And if you are going all in on Tyler Buchner while Dante Moore hasn't committed yet, that's just bad recruiting. So it behooves them to draw this out. I don't think they'll announce any starter until after Dante Moore has committed somewhere. Just a gut feeling. It's how I would handle it. Is this guy is important enough, a program changer. He's incredibly confident, incredibly skilled. When he gives interviews as a high schooler, he sounds like he's been doing this his whole life. They've talked to him openly about how the offense would be tailored to him if necessary. He already runs RPO at Detroit King High School. But you'd only mess yourself up if you commit fully to somebody right now, especially one with like Buckner, who has 3 years of eligibility left. That would be a mistake.
In the sense of college football, I think every season is a separate season unto itself. This year, not like Notre Dame's not going to announce who their starting quarterback is. Mike's not going to announce who the starting quarterback should be. So I'll announce it. It should be Tyler Buckner. I think it will be Tyler Buckner. When we're in Columbus, Ohio, probably on Saturday night of Labor Day weekend, it will be Tyler Buckner. But that doesn't mean the starting quarterback in game one is going to be the same starting quarterback in game 10, 11, or 12. Like, things happen, things change. Tyler Buckner, you mentioned all the intangibles. I think the one intangible right up there too is Tyler Buckner's got to prove he can stay healthy through a season. Yep. Like he had some lingering injuries last year to where it got to the point where after they lost to Cincinnati, I wrote it needs to be Drew Pine moving forward. Forget Jack Cohn. He wasn't able to win a game that he was really supposed to win and expected to win at home. Go with Drew Pine the rest of the year. And they didn't. So that again shows what the media knows about Notre Dame football, but
not the media, Tom, not the media, you. And is that now I know why Jack Cohn was nicest guy in the world. Jack Cohn would glare at one guy after every game. Definitely. It was Tom glaring. Definitely.
But like, I think Drew Pine, this also has a setup of a situation of maybe a little Brandon Wimbush, Ian Book, mm-hmm. to where everybody looked at Brandon Wimbush and said, he's the guy. Who's this Ian Book guy? Like, he's from Northern California. Nobody knew about him coming out of high school. I think he was going to go to Washington State or something coming out when he was looking at colleges. Nobody saw Ian Book coming, and he just kind of sat there, bided his time, got better, waited his turn, didn't really make that much stink about not playing. Similar to Drew Pine, to where Tyler Buckner may be the guy to start, but I think the staff has a pretty good feel that if they have to go to Drew Pine, they can win with Drew Pine.
Yeah, Drew Pine seems to me as like the guy, like he's not flashy. He's just the guy that'll get the job done. Mm-hmm. I was going to go Ryan Fitzpatrick, but like you're going to get moments of flash. But no, I think Drew Pine's more of like he's more of an accurate guy that's just gonna put the ball on the money and everything. And Tyler's more that flashy guy that can take off, that can do different things. He's more athletic, so it's gonna be an interesting quarterback competition. But I understand where you guys are coming from, where they're not gonna announce anything until later. And it's funny because we even asked Jack Cohn at his pro day, like, hey, what do you think about the quarterback competition? He's like, oh, I love those guys. Da, 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 da. Yeah, we didn't ask you if you love them. We're asking you, who do you think should take the job? And he's like, I think both of those guys are qualified. Yes, sir, we understand that. But who do you think deserves? And he just wouldn't give it to us. And it's funny because I did ask Drew, like, in the level of competition, like, how are you and Tyler? And he's like, no, we're best friends, blah, 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 blah. We sit and watch film. I'm like, yeah, but when you get on the field, he's like, no, when I got on the field, I'm in killer mode. Like, I do want to be the best. I want to be the starting quarterback. I want to do this. I'm like, okay, there you go. A little bit of fire. I get a little bit of fire out of one of you guys. But it definitely is going to be interesting to see what they decide to roll with. Because I asked Marcus, and that was, I think it was my first question to him when I was here. I'm like, what are you looking for in a starting quarterback? He's like, I'm looking for a leader who's accurate, who is athletic, and who will not turn the ball over. I'm like, okay, turn the ball over. That might be a little bit more Tyler.
Takes care of the football.
Takes care of the football.
Has been the refrain.
Yep.
And Tyler Buckner, Virginia Tech example in particular, Cincinnati was another one deep in his own end. He has not taken care of the football. And Drew Pine hasn't had as many opportunities to do so, but that is going to be, isn't it? We can agree. It seems like it's not about who can stretch the field or make the chunk play or put throw a scare into the opposing defense. It's about who can make sure, as Marcus says, that every possession ends with a kick. He wants it to end with a field goal attempt or an extra point attempt or a punt. Worst case, it doesn't end with, now you're giving the ball up deep in your own end. And Buckner has done that in his career, in short span.
Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. The way I kind of see the way that, like, because Marcus said it, offensive and defensive line, I feel like they want to win games by being able to run the football, take care of the quarterback. but then at the same time get after the quarterback and kind of depend more on their defense to kind of win them game, like have the defense, the opposing or have your defense be the monster. And then your offense just needs to put up points, and you kind of want to rely more on your running game and stuff like that, and not have to, I don't know. I don't want to say not rely on your quarterback, but it's kind of one of those things where if you run the football well and your defense is able to go after them, you should be able to win the football game and not really have to put it on the arm of your quarterback, I guess, in a sense. Tom, am I correct on that, or what do you think?
It's hard to say right now in mid-April that you want to rely on your quarterback, because we don't know who he's going to be throwing to.
That's true.
And I think that's a major issue of this football team that we'll probably get into as well. You know, you have Michael Mayer, and we've talked about Michael Mayer and what he's been able to do. They'll use the running backs more, Chris Tyree out of the backfield, the way they use Chris Tyree in the Fiesta Bowl. But the wide receivers, yeah, you're going to have a really good run game and a really good offensive line, because that wide receiver position is just so unknown and uncertain as we sit here 12, 13 practices into spring ball.
The receivers and the corners kind of mirror each other, and the offensive line and the defensive line kind of mirror each other. Well, guys, one last thing I wanted to get into. The blue and gold game is coming up. What's one thing that excites you guys about the blue and gold game? Mike, I'll start off with you. What's one thing that excites you about this game, this matchup?
When it's over, I'll be excited when it's over. And we're walking out of the stadium, and we've written the last of the spring coverage, which has been voluminous. And we appreciate everyone reading it. That's how I look at it. No, I mean, what I'm curious about, I don't know, I'm excited. I'm curious to see just what some of the points that we talked about on this podcast. I think as we come out of there, if there's not clarity on the quarterback position, then you think of the old coaching saw, if you have two quarterbacks, you actually have none. Mm-hmm. So there's something there. That we'll be looking for. If there's a sense that there's breakdowns on that offensive line that Harry Hiestand, and I don't think there will be. I think that the technician side of them, of course, they're not going to have Jarrett Patterson in that second straight spring game. That's kind of the quarterback of your line calling out all the signals. So that's, you know, maybe we shouldn't read too much into if there are breakdowns there. They're playing without some key pieces here that are, you know, Avery Davis is not, but he's going to be part of that receiver group that we're questioning now. If he has a full healthy return from ACL, pretty important slot guy to look for, and has proven his ability to get behind defenses. So Jason Adamalola, not part of this thing in the spring, but it's going to be pretty important moving the line coming once the fall starts. And Cam Hart is not going to be in that spring game, but he's your shutdown corner. So I don't know how much we can really glean from the spring game, and that's why I'll just be excited when it's over.
It's funny when you get to Notre Dame Stadium for a spring game and you see the crowd and they run out onto the field, the players run out on the field, and all this energy and excitement and everything for like the first two series. And then it all just kind of evaporates. Like everybody sitting there in the stands is like, wait a minute, is that it? Like the spring game becomes just another practice that we've seen at the Irish Athletic Center. Although now we're sitting on the ninth floor of the press box and maybe eating some free hot dogs, and that's it. So, I mean, it's something like Mike said, once it's over, then you're good. And I'm most excited to see. As long as I have a storyline for a column, it always comes back to the storyline. It always comes back to the stories that we can tell. If there's something that I can write about that's good, I'm happy. But if we're scrambling,
I call quarterbacks. Boom! I called it already.
We won't see anything from time to time.
Quarterbacks, we
find that's going to be worth writing about. So if there can be one really good storyline that I can jump on at 3:15 in the afternoon on Saturday, I'll be happy.
Yeah, no, that it's definitely it. I mean, I'm curious just because it's my first time getting to go into the stadium, getting to watch the experience of a blue and gold game. I mean, obviously it's historic and everything, so I'm definitely excited to to see kind of how that goes. But I feel like what Tom is telling me right now is going to happen. Like the first two series, I'm going to be like, oh my God. And then I'm going to be like, okay, like, that's cool. Like, let's go. Like, can we do the fast forward, you know, when a kid's getting, or the team's getting blown out and you kind of just run the clock out, and everything. So, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see kind of the secondary, like Mike was alluding to a little bit, seeing those guys that, those second and third tier guys, see how they kind of perform and see how much they've learned. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting atmosphere. Hopefully it's dry. It's a dry day. Hopefully it's a sunny day. Hopefully we don't get any.
No. This, and Mike knows this. Fernando's the rookie, so he doesn't know. The last thing you ever want when you're covering a Notre Dame home football game, Fernando, is a sunny day, because the media sits on the east side of the stadium, and if you're trying to watch a football game, you're spending four quarters like this trying to keep the sun out of your eyes. So if you have sunglasses, bring your sunglasses, because if it's a sunny day, you're sitting up there in the press box, you're going to need him. Otherwise, you're not going to have any idea what's going on in the field down below.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah. There you go. My first rookie mistake. I didn't know that. Well, I already had one. I don't know if you know this, Tom. I showed up at a practice at 7:55 thinking it was at 7:55, and it wasn't until 10:30. So there you go. That was my rookie mistake. But
that's all right. We all make them.
Yeah, no, I definitely, and again, this is the first of many podcasts. I'm excited. Mike, Tom, thank you guys so much. You're going to be hearing a lot from us this upcoming season. We're going to have some fun guests. We're going to have some fun, and obviously keep you guys informed with what Pot of Gold is going to bring you guys, but definitely excited for this opportunity and talk Notre Dame football with you guys. Thank you guys so much.
Let's go.